This is the one I told you you couldn't be part of.
I want to be part of it too. I'm always going to be part of it.
Hello. Hello. Your daughter is famous.
She's famous.
Hello, partners. Welcome back to Good Morning Ecosystem. I'm Brian Garvey, SVP of HubSpot's Solution Partner and Provider Ecosystem.
And I'm Karen Ng, SVP of HubSpot's Product and Partnerships. We're here to talk about ecosystems and new connected go-to-market strategies, everything from social selling. So we're excited to have Jill here to deliver a seamless experience to how partners are changing, how GTM strategies are changing, and to learn on every episode.
I couldn't agree more. I'm so excited about today's conversation. Joining us today is a really big leader who is one of the first employees at Salesforce, advised HubSpot, and reported to the CEO of Marketo before it was acquired by Adobe. I think it's fair to say that she's obsessed about the changing B2B buying environment and what revenue teams need to do to evolve their culture, skills, processes, data, and tools to meet the moment. And that's just the beginning. Such a dynamic guest.
Jill, we're so excited to have you today.
I am honored to be here today. So thank you.
Well, I'll kick us off. Jill, I think, 52 quarters of selling at Salesforce and Eloqua. That's amazing. What did you see change in go-to-market during that time?
I will start with, I got into sales. My first quota-carrying sales role was at Salesforce. It was called Salesforce.com. It was in 2000. SaaS wasn't a term, and cloud definitely described the things in the sky, not the ecosystem of cloud providers. What has changed in, quote, go-to-market since then? When I started in sales, go-to-market equaled sales. Mm. And then my buyer was marketing for over a decade. And I was part of the transformation, the modernization, the digital movement of marketing from lead, right? Marketing was leads tossed over to sales. Marketing was analog. It was offline. Marketing was brand. It wasn't demand. In B2B, there was no data. You didn't even have a first-party database. You weren't sending emails. There weren't newsletters. There were no forms. There was no automation. There was no scoring or nurturing. None of that existed. The function of marketing operations didn't exist. There wasn't, 13,000 plus software products in the MarTech stack. So the whole point of that is then go to market was sales plus marketing. Fast forward to today, which I know we'll get there, but everyone had a wake up call that we're in a subscription world and that we have to get our customers to value fast. And then we have to deliver recurring value and have a recurring impact on their business. And that it is better to keep a customer and spend resources on an existing customer than try to go out and fill the top of the funnel and win new customers. And so CS, customer success, is now part of your go-to-market. But we'll get to we'll work back from this. Today, we also know that partnerships and the ecosystem is increasingly more important to your go-to-market. And so when I started, it was sales, then sales and marketing, then sales, marketing, and CS. And now it's sales, marketing, CS, and your partner ecosystem.
Was there a moment you felt like an ecosystem as an inflection point happened, or it was kind of just creeped up on everything?
Because I started my career in SaaS, and because I've been part of the best ecosystem leaders, right? So it's like I have been part of companies that were first in building ecosystems. I have been part of companies that were first in creating communities for their customers. I have been part of companies where they had customer awards, and not just customer awards, but partner awards.
Yeah.
Part of companies that built academies, not just to train on the product, but on the profession.
Yeah.
So for me, it is core to my experience. What I see in the market more broadly is that many companies are now realizing that they're one small piece of their customer's ecosystem. Mm-hmm. This is not about our ecosystem first. It is about my customer's ecosystem and understanding their ecosystem and then designing mine around theirs.
I love that. So customer centric.
Customer core centric, centered, obsessed, and truly not lip service, but truly the everything we can do partner led, we can do ecosystem led, we can do sales led, we can do marketing led, we can do community led, but really it is the customer. We do all of those other things, those motions, but we do it in service of the customer.
Could I ask a quick follow-up on that? It's super compelling. Like when you think about those platforms and those ecosystem leaders that were doing that, that were putting the customer truly and the customer's ecosystem truly at the center of their world, what does that look like? How is that different than what, you know, a typical ecosystem or platform how they might approach it?
When you put the customer at the center and you are designing for, you're also designing with the customer. You are living in market with the customer rather than going to market. We ultimately go to market, but first we live in the market, in the communities, in the ecosystem, where our customers are learning. We are part of educating ourselves on what our customers need to know, yeah. Right? So we live in the market. We talk about voice of the customer. Mm-hmm. I talk about the other voice of the VOC. It's the voice of the community, mm-hmm. right? So it's truly listening to what's happening outside of our four walls.
Yeah.
Right?
I love that. I've seen the importance of community just grow, you know. It's one of those other things you were talking about. Like now we have a taxonomy or a word for it, but it was always there and it just got more important too. And it's in that realm of like my community and what I'm hearing and learning. Yeah.
It's more structured. Mm-hmm. So now we have the frameworks. Now we have the models. Now we have the metrics. Right. We have ways to think about it that allows us to be more operational around the concept of community. Right. How do we create a purpose and a mission of the community? How do mm-hmm. we hire the right community leaders?
Love it.
Right? Personality for engagement, for someone who's a connector of other people to each other, someone who tells stories, someone who looks outside of even brings people in from other communities, right? There's this, how do we measure engagement over time? Like we come up with these frameworks and these models and these benchmarks, data, right? I think that it is the data that allows us to start and then operationalizing the data, visibility to the data, operationalize the data, and then analyze the data.
And I think it's very much in line with sort of the ethos of the podcast and where we're at with HubSpot's ecosystem in terms of building in public and experimenting together and really diving deep on those things that are working well and kind of bringing those practices to life. To Karen's point, I think it's something that you've naturally done and then we put in a label to it. So we're very much looking at what's working in the ecosystem today and sort of sharing that out. Kind of speaking of which, you kind of have very much a brand as a leader in social selling. Can you share a little bit about kind of what that means and how do you think about your own sales strategy?
Absolutely. And in fact, it was my brand and recognition in the industry mm-hmm. around social selling that led me to my first advisor role at HubSpot. And we wind back the clock from 10 years at Eloqua, early in building the marketing automation category, being a sales professional trapped in a marketer's body. Reason being, my buyer was marketing. LinkedIn was one of my early customers at Eloqua. I never thought of LinkedIn as a resume, a digital resume. I thought about it as really a database where my buyers were and where I could go research my buyers so that I could be more relevant to my buyers, that I could build better relationships with my buyers that ultimately turned into revenue, right? Yeah. Revenue, lifetime value, and advocacy. So these channels, right? Who wants to be cold called? We didn't want it back then. We definitely don't want it now.
Yeah.
But who wants to be helped, right? So who wants to be understood? And that's what these social networks like LinkedIn and back then Twitter, I would go, if I had a buyer like GE in the industrial Internet of Things, right? Industrial Internet of Things, who am I to know what is going on in the industrial Internet of Things? Well, there's a lot of content around the industrial Internet of Things. There are influencers and industry experts. There are companies, there are communities. And so if one of my customers or my future customers was in industrial Internet of Things, I would go and I would create a Twitter list of who the voices were.
And just learn.
And learn.
That's amazing.
Learn from them so that I had the language to have the conversation with the company that I wanted to be my customer in the industrial Internet of Things.
Yeah.
So that when I have the conversation, I show up with more context. If sales in one word is context. Mm-hmm. The layers of context that I need to have about my customers and their ecosystem and the people that they trust, that is so important. And social selling was something that I just did naturally in understanding if I needed to know about my buyer, I needed to understand where my buyer was. I needed, like, now, if I want to have a conversation with someone, I go and I see if they've been on a podcast. Right, Brian, I'm surprised you're not drinking coffee right now because you drink coffee all day.
It's true.
I heard you say that. That's not on your LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
You said that in a conversation that I went and listened to so that I could be more relevant to you and just know that, right? Yeah. I think one of the first conversations we had was like at 4 o'clock and I made sure I had a cup of coffee on my desk.
Oh my God. I love it. I was like, Jill, well, you found me through LinkedIn too, with some other kind of thing. And like, guess how you got on this podcast?
And community, right? Yeah. Karen, like, you care passionately about community. Yeah. I'm an advisor to an early stage community tech company. Common Room was one of the places that I went and learned about language and frameworks and metrics around community. So I was learning from you, and then I was able to then come and have a more relevant conversation.
Completely. Yeah.
That's how it works. And it's long-term relationships. This isn't transactional, right? This is way more long-term.
Brilliant.
Cool. If you think back on your career, is there anything you wish you would have told your old self or that you would have done differently?
I feel like I learn way more from my mistakes than I do my successes. I think that I would have learned earlier that I don't stay in a swim lane. I taught my kids rules are made to be broken or changed. Laws are made to be followed, but rules broken or changed. I think looking back, I would have thought more about the job that I was hired to do and done that first. And then the cherry on top was, I'm going to do the job that I was hired to do, and I'm going to do this other thing that is, I know, important. An example, wow, take me back to my first territory review at Salesforce. And this will actually give you some idea of my thinking about relationships too. My territory was like Virginia, Delaware, DC at that point in time. And I go in not with like a formal territory review, but a new way to think about territories. And because I knew that the people that had bought from me before and I took such great care of them, they were successful. I set expectations that when they moved from a company to another one, that I wanted to be their sales rep at the company that they went to. Well, if they weren't at a company headquartered in Virginia, which was my territory, then why wouldn't I own that account? Because I have the relationship, I've earned the trust, that buyer doesn't have to start all over again. Well, okay, maybe that makes sense, but that's not how it works. That's not scalable. And so me, I think it makes sense. I think it's common sense, but not knowing and understanding enough about the business and how do you scale a business. And the, all the infighting that would be happening if that was the model, right? Not thinking about the implications, and then the consequence of fairness or perceived fairness. I was thinking more about like me and what would benefit me.
And the customer, like that continuity of relationship. You know, yes. What ended up happening in the territory? Yeah.
Exactly. I cried because I was called out. And at first I was like, I'm going to go back in with like the Virginia flag and the Virginia bird. And I'm going to do like the Virginia territory review. And it was when I cooled off and realized, okay, let me think about, and I was new to sales and quotas and all of that. Let me think about and study. What do the best companies do in terms of, you know, territory assignment and so forth? So, you know, being willing to admit that you messed up and being able to go back and do the thing that you were actually asked to do.
Cool.
If we pull the thread on that and we think about, you know, do the job you were hired to do, and we put it in the context of partners today, like within our ecosystem right now, what is the job you would say we're asking partners to do today?
I'm on a lot of conversations with partner leaders and CROs. And I was on a call with a CRO yesterday, and he's 4 months into the role at his company. And I know him. I've worked with him in the past. So we're able to have a real conversation, even with the note taker on. He trusted that I wouldn't be sharing the note taker stuff in the conversation. And he's got a lot to fix in the company. And he needs fast, right? He needs results quickly, and it doesn't see the partnership team as a source of real revenue right now, and that they are spread too thinly in terms of they don't focus on the things that are going to have a more meaningful impact on new logo acquisition, and so what partner leaders need to have more of is like know your customer, know your audience.
Yes.
When you're talking to the chief revenue officer, you're not talking about now we have, you know, 1500 partners
or it's revenue.
It is revenue. It's also, I was just right before this on a conversation with partner revenue leader at her company. And we were talking about the partner ecosystem. And she said, well, I really only care about these five of the 50 that she has. And that they're really only doing co-sell with five of the 50 tech partners that she has. And so it was this like, I only care about these five. And I was willing to challenge her. And I said, what about the other 45? What can you do for them to help them grow their revenue, to help them improve the integration that they have with your product? And guess what? That better integration is better for your joint customers. Right? You might not be able to see the dollar amount today, but that better integration with your partners is better for your customer. And what's better for the customer means the customer will stay longer. The customer will likely buy more from you.
Yeah.
And the customer will tell others. And that could be a differentiator of yours, that you have a better integration than your competitor does.
So yeah, for sure.
A partner leader, just thinking about the five that they're getting, you know, immediate, measurable, right today revenue, I think that that's a problem.
Yeah, so I mean, you touched on it. You know, you have part of its revenue, but you have retention, you have expansion in an IB, and then you've created advocates, you know, that are longer reaching.
Advocates will bring more partners, the better partners, the more relevant partners into your ecosystem. I always think about one to many, right? One to one when we're building relationships, but when we think about growing our revenue, right? How does one customer lead to more than one customer? How does one partner lead to more than one customer? How does one partner lead to more than one, you know, one partner? It's this one to many. Mm-hmm. And we know it's like this compound, this force multiplier. And when we think just one person to one company, that doesn't scale like it does when you have this one to many relationship.
Yeah. When you think about some of the, you know, one or two or best partners today, what are some of the strategies or things that they're doing?
I think define, like, who are your best partners first comes through the lens. I know you're not going to be surprised through the customer, right? So it's the partners who solve a problem for the customer that you don't solve solely today. You don't solve it alone. It is filling a gap in your product. It is a partner who connects other partners, right? They bring partner ideas to you. They bring here, like, I know I'm a great partner in your ecosystem. I know the ecosystem. I know my customers. I know that here's another gap and here's a company that fills it really well. So good partners, great partners are thinking about your partner ecosystem, your customer ecosystem, right? And that's that like they care. They have the same values. They want to deliver value more holistically. They're willing to be part of your user groups, their partner advisory boards. They're helping your customers win awards, right? Your partners, yes, revenue. Of course, we need revenue. We want to help them actually grow their revenue when they are companies that are doing better. That just is the fuel, right? It's we've got to think about the impact of growing their business. And when we help them grow their business, they help us grow our business and they help our customers grow their business as well. Feedback is important. Voice of the partner. Voice of the community, voice of the customer, voice of the ecosystem, right? They're bringing that voice to you too. They're willing to have hard conversations with you as well.
Yeah.
Those are good
I love
partners.
That. Yeah. I think that's one thing that I admire about our partners, our solutions partners in particular. They are, to your earlier point about putting the customer at the center, they do that. And in partnership with our app partners, really trying to absorb some of that complexity and help customers grow better through their own ecosystems. And that includes our app partners and HubSpot. So it's really exciting.
I love seeing the solutions partners in the HubSpot ecosystem, not just mastering HubSpot. And that's like HubSpot has changed tremendously from being a single hub marketing to multi-hub, six hubs, sales, CS, ops, commerce, CMS. So now you have six hubs. And your platform, right, where developers are building on top of your platform, you have integration partners, and you're seeing solutions partners say, there are all of these app partners that extend the value of HubSpot that will help the customer get farther in their journey.
Yeah.
It'll solve more of the customer problem.
Yeah.
And you're seeing this cross ecosystem collaboration, connectivity, right?
Yeah.
With your solutions and your tech and your app partners. HubSpot doing something right for that to be happening.
Yeah, I definitely see it. Last night I was at a technology app partner dinner, and it was just, you know, a CDP almost. And, I met an elite solution partner, HubSpot solution partner there. It was great. I sat right next to him for dinner, and he was there learning about the technology because our customers have these data needs and he wants to understand HubSpot plus other technologies that would help. So I love the blend.
Yeah.
It really helps.
You guys creating a forum for that to happen, right? A lot of it does happens organically, but then you start to hear your best partners are finding each other.
Yeah.
And they're doing matchmaking. And then, okay, how can we use data, right? And how can we use systems and process to do more of that, right? To make more of that, not just organic, but prescribe, right? How do you actually now make more of those connections, have more dinners that you host, more events that include both your customer advisory board and your partner advisory board? How do you actually have some partners in your customer advisory board, right? Like you start to think about more dots that you can connect and more ways to create more cohesion, I guess, and to do more orchestration of all of the moving parts.
Yeah, well, that's what we're hoping for. I think you're saying that with Partner Day and EKO, but we'll help provide some of the areas and spaces to create those conversations and moments.
Which is important, right? Like you want to be the one who creates and facilitates that connectivity and that learning, right? And learning together in a shared environment.
Brilliant.
My mom, she's trying to hide from the camera. Hi, Mom.
Special guest.
This is the one I told you couldn't be part of.
I want to be part of it, too. I'm always going to be part of it.
Hello.
Hello.
Your daughter is famous. She's famous.
She's my daughter.
Humble.
What?
I got my hard work and my humility from my mom.
Amazing.
Well, Jill, that was such a great conversation. Thank you so much for joining us. And partners, I hope you got a ton out of this. Can't wait to hear what you think. We'll be back next Tuesday with Good Morning Ecosystem, wherever you get your podcasts. And until then, grow better.
Together.
Together. Yeah.